the morning again. The title of my talk this morning is Zen Students, Zen Teachers. And as many of you know, student-teacher relationship is central to our lineage tradition. And there are, and it goes back to the time of the Buddha. And there's so many stories of pivotal moments between student and teacher. And in a larger context, we all have been students, and we all, in a sense, are teachers. We've gone to school, so we know that kind of context for being a student. And we all have been teachers in the sense that we have skills and knowledge that we've imparted. And in a really broad sense, there's a tradition not as strong in our culture and society, but of master and apprentice. So someone that takes on that apprentice role and really tries to deeply imprint on what is it that the master sculptor, the master builder, master craftsperson can do. So what is student-teacher relationship now? In modern times, we read the stories, and you can imagine ancient times in India, and wandering monks encountering a teacher and having some sort of pivotal moment. But here we are, right? How does it serve us now? How does it translate into modern times? And part of the inspiration for the talk is that there are more and more people showing up with Araxu like Shoketsu's got around her neck, and sometimes it's a little bit mysterious about what's that about, what's going on there. So part of it is to demystify what that formalized relationship is, but the deeper question is to consider how does even an informal encounter between a teacher and a student function to support your practice now? What does it mean now? And a little bit of a, what's the word, like disclaimer or caution or a sidebar asterisk, is that Zen is really non-proselytizing. So the big header, this is not a talk that's saying this is what people need to do or formalize relationships. This is just to demystify and talk about how do they function, formally, informally, in the Zendo, other places. Consider that question during the talk. It's not something that we especially encourage or discourage. It's very, very open-handed, and in fact, for those that are wanting to step into that formalized relationship, many obstacles are typically thrown in the way. So the classic image is someone waiting at the temple gate, the monastery gate, and having to just wait for days and days and days, and people peek out and notice and like, oh, they're still there, I don't know, and eventually recognize their seriousness and their fierceness, and they just are demanding to be let into the temple and learn the Dharma. So that's the classic image. So that's kind of the tradition that we're in, that there's obstacles thrown up along the way. So that'd be the opposite of proselytizing. Because sometimes when you look around, especially if you're newer and you see Wagesas like Pat's got and Roxu's, it can be like, is that what we're supposed to be doing? And no. This is meant to support your practice, and sometimes it does support your practice. Sometimes it is helpful for your practice. So this is about diving into some of that. The edge, I'll share with you, the edge of my practice is to look at my notes. So I forget where I'm at sometimes. So I want to share the story of the first transmission and this meeting between student and teacher. Lovely story, and it's told this way. In this story, Shakyamuni gave a wordless sermon to his disciples, his Sangha, by holding up a white flower. No one in the audience understands the flower sermon except, that's what they call it, the flower sermon. So he's raising the flower, except Makakasho, who smiles. So within Zen, the flower sermon communicates the inevitable nature of suchness. And Makakasho's smile signifies this direct transmission of wisdom without words. And Shakyamuni affirmed this, saying, "I possess the true Dharma eye, the marvelous mind of Nirvana, the true form of the formless, the subtle Dharma gate that does not rest on words or letters, but is a special transmission outside of the scriptures. This I entrust to Makakasho." So here he's saying, I just love that quote. Here he's saying, student and teacher here share the same mind. You are the same as me, same heart, same mind. They are different, but there's something that's deeply realized that they both know. And this raising of the flower met by the smile, or this moment of recognition, sharing this realization. So what the story doesn't include is the work that came before. So there's Makakasho and there's Shakyamuni Buddha. What did they do together? How did they know each other? What happened before that led to this moment of recognition? It didn't come out of nothing. And so it doesn't talk about the conversations that they had, the conflicts that they had, the work that they did together, the support and the guidance that the Buddha offered. And so that's a lead into, so what is it that the student does here, and what is the work of the teacher? So what are the work of both of them together? So I'm going to just share some thoughts about this, but at the end of the talk, I just encourage you to bring forward your thoughts about student-teacher relationship. So here are some of the things that teachers do, and then I'm going to talk about what students do. So teachers serve as a giant mirror reflecting back yourself, both what you need to know and your inherent Buddha nature. It's often hard to see our own Buddha nature. We can kind of believe it in theory. But a teacher reflects back again and again and again, finding our way to our own wisdom, our own unique expression in this lifetime in your body of Buddha nature. And when I think of my own teacher, Gyokoko, that's like the first thing that comes to mind about what she did for me, reflected back again and again and again, countless hours over many, many years. This belief, confidence in my Buddha nature. I came to practice struggling with the koan of worthiness and belonging. And so she did a lot of listening. A lot of listening. Like, but you don't know this about me. You don't know that. I'm going to prove to you that I'm not worthy, don't belong. What about this? How about that? What do you say to that? And again and again and again, to reflect back, I trust the practice. I believe in you. I see your Buddha nature. Great confidence and great patience is what she offered. A lot of patience. So another thing that teachers do is they receive our projections. So we often project onto other people things we assume about them, what they're like, what qualities they possess. Having a teacher can make us aware of the ways we are projecting onto them, and it reflects back useful information to us, helps us see our own karma, what it is that we're projecting onto them that maybe not exactly real, but super useful. And we do it all the time, not just with teachers, with lots of things. With Gyokoko, one of the things I projected onto her were, well, and it wasn't exactly projection in some way, but what I saw in her were qualities in her that I wanted, but that I didn't think I possessed. So I could imagine she's got it, I don't, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm projecting that onto her. And Kenny, it's hard to describe the quality that I sensed. It was equanimity is perhaps one way, in a way that she functioned and moved when I saw her in the zendo, saw her in the kitchen, and when I met with her. So there's something about that that was mysterious that attracted me. And some of that was projection. Some of that really is her. A third thing that I'll offer is that teachers sometimes offer specific guidance, but typically not as often as we'd like. Typically, we really, I came to practice like, could you please give me the syllabus and agenda and just let me, like, I can tick off the boxes of what to do, and I'll do that. I know that. And it just doesn't work that way. But sometimes they are able to give you some guidance. One of the stories I read in preparing for this was about a teacher who described his relationship with students as though the student is driving in a car down a foggy road on a cliff and just will shout out, hey, you know, they see them going off to the ditch on the left. Hey, nudge a little, go a little to the right, and go a little to the left. So offer maybe some helpful guidance, but they aren't driving the car. I think of a teacher as someone who is at least just a bit, sometimes a lot, further down the path than the student and can offer some support, just plain and simple. Can just offer some support. They've been walking the path, they can offer you some support. So, this is related to what teachers do, but I'll tell a little story. So, when I was living in Germany, I had a chance to practice at this place called Zen River in Holland a few times, and it's in the White Plum lineage, which is related to the Great Vow lineage, and so I went there, and the retreat was led by an abbot there who had been abbot for, I don't know, probably a decade, and still had a relationship with his teacher who was going back and forth between Europe and the United States. And so I was really curious to know, what does student-teacher relationship look now? You're like an abbot of a temple, and what keeps you in that relationship? You're obviously, you know, you've got your whole temple and students of your own. What does it look like now? And I asked him, what does he look for in a teacher, and why to stay with the teacher? And he said something like three things that I could remember. So the teacher should be an example. So they should be someone that you can look to and practice as an example of what integrated practice looks like. Teacher should be someone you trust. Very important. And the teacher should be someone who inspires, who continues to inspire you. So as an example, this doesn't mean that they're perfect, and sometimes that example is, how do you deal with mistakes? Watching your teacher deal with mistakes. But it also means an example of integrated practice, making practice the center of your life and how you orient your life. And looping back to being trustworthy, a teacher should be ethical and trustworthy. And it often falls to the teacher to establish appropriate boundaries. But inherently, you should trust them. And a teacher is someone, along that same line, is someone who can fluidly shift between stepping forward and stepping back. So one who is able to lead and one who's able to also not be in the lead and to follow when it's time to follow and put that down. Jiko's given lots of talks on that, and she often uses this phrase, changing heads and trading faces. And I love that phrase, changing heads and trading faces. So that's actually what we all are doing, this picking up and putting down when we function together as a Sangha. Someone is opening up the temple this morning, and you look towards that person to say what needs to be done. And then you put it back down again when it's your turn. Someone's training you to be the chant leader, and then they're in that position of authority, and then you put it down when it's not that time. And a comment about that last bit about being inspiring. So my note says, maybe not 24/7, right? Yeah. Maybe not all the time, right? It's not like 100%, because teachers can throw obstacles in the way or leave you with frustrating questions to ponder or leave you with nothing at all at times. But overall, their life and their path inspires. A teacher's styles differ greatly, and both within traditions and across traditions. And as I was doing some preparation for this, it occurred to me there's this sort of continuum of student-teacher relationship that is ranges from more of a spiritual friend on the path to more of a devotional type practice. So there's kind of this whole range of relationship. And different things click and are the right medicine at different times, depending on your particular karmic conditioning. That it's good that there's this range. When I visit a temple or go on retreat someplace else, I pretty much always want to go to Sanzen with the teacher, because it's so interesting, right? You don't know what their style is going to be, and I always get a little nervous still. And I think that's really healthy to go like, what's that about? Why am I nervous? What's going on? And you just never know what you're going to encounter there. So I just throw that out there as a way to encourage you to experience those different styles. It can really be a big mirror about what's going on for you in that moment. And super interesting. Some teachers will just look at you and wait for you to talk. And others, like sometimes I'll come in with a question, and I know that I better ask that question like it's the minute I sit down, or they're gonna ask me something. And I was like, wait, I didn't get my question in. So just know that there's different styles, and it's just really interesting. In our tradition, there's an emphasis on time and proximity in developing a relationship with a teacher. So just know that that's what Domyo and I are really steeped in student-teacher relationship. And it really manifests in lots of different ways across the country in different temples, how people function together as students and teachers. I know some that really do it more like online and see them maybe once a year. The way that Domyo and I trained, it was really about time and proximity, doing things together, being seen. That's why temple roles can be really helpful, doing jobs, coming forward. It just, you're able to see each other in a different way. So now I'm going to shift gears and talk about students. So what does a student do? How do we function as a student? Jack Kornfield says that the most important qualities of a student are sincerity and commitment and common sense. So sincerity, commitment, common sense. I agree. But also add, most important is a willingness to be seen, a willingness to bring your practice forward in whatever condition it is, again and again and again. And grappling with that very question, what does it mean to bring my practice forward? What does it mean to be seen? Is this okay? Is that okay? Takes a bit to figure it out, find your footing. And 90% of the work in a student-teacher relationship is really on the part of the student. So bringing your whole self, who you are, is really all that's needed. Just bring yourself forward completely, wholeheartedly. And don't leave your brain behind. Right? So that's the common sense. Use your common sense. There are teachers that go awry, and this talk is not about those stories, that there are abuses of power out there. So it's important for the health of the Sangha for people to be aware of that potential and to take care of each other, to talk to each other. If something doesn't feel right, someplace here or someplace else, say something. I think that's when things have gone off the rails. And I just mentioned that because it's really up to the whole Sangha to take care of each other in this and talk to each other and have communication. And the breakdowns, if you read those stories, are often that everybody knew something was wrong and nobody was talking to each other. So that's why we do things like have the teachers advisory committee and have all these different informal meetings and things like that it's one of the reasons, not the only reason, but we want to just foster that sense of communication and that it's a responsibility of everybody that's here to take care of each other in that way. So another book I've read, it has such a loaded title, but she's really interesting. Maybe you've read this. It's called Do You Need a Guru? So like, anybody coming to my home and sees that on the shelf, I just know they go, oh? But she's walked in a very interesting path, and she's got some different, she's had lots of teachers and had some things go awry and some wonderful teachers that were absolutely transformational. And she says that there's another list of three necessary qualities for student and teacher and the student-teacher relationship. So the qualities are basic psychological sanity. So it doesn't mean that we don't have our ups and downs, but there are times when we come from really, really deep suffering and trauma that Zen is not the whole answer for. It can be part of it, but there can be other health and other medicine. Sometimes it gets put out there that just simply sitting Zazen will do it all. That is not necessarily the case. The next one is conscious relationship to power dynamics. So that overlaps with what I was talking about in terms of trust and ethics. And it applies to both student and teacher. And again, it's all of our responsibility. So power dynamics are tricky, and explicit power versus implicit power, and who wields power, it's all helpful to be aware of those things. The last one she mentions is mutual trust and surrender. So there's an element of surrender in the relationship. Both student and teachers make themselves vulnerable in this process. I mentioned that most of the work is the part of the student's willingness to be seen, but the teacher also is willing to be authentic and seen. And there needs to be trust on both sides. And there's an acknowledgement on both sides that the teacher will invariably disappoint, right? There's oftentimes, it could be years, but it generally occurs. That's the bad news. But it's it does happen. And I think it just says that we're human in this relationship. And I put that out there because it can be helpful to know that it's not uncommon for that to happen. So I'll end with just a couple last thoughts and one of my favorite Dogen quotes. It says, it's like pouring water into the ocean and spreading it endlessly, or like transmitting the lamp and allowing it to shine forever. In thousands of millions of transmission, the trunk and branches are one. Breaking an eggshell by pecking from the inside and outside at once. And I love that part of breaking an eggshell by pecking from the inside and outside at once. And then there is transformation. In the ultimate sense, nothing is given. There's nothing that a teacher can give you. The most important, fundamental, deepest truth is what we already are, what we already arise from. So that can't be given, because it is. It just is. But sometimes teachers help point the way to this deep realization and relationship to that. But there's fundamentally nothing that can be given. So that is my talk. Thank you for listening. And I just welcome your thoughts and comments and opinions about that.
I just wanted to kind of describe specifically your opportunities to interact with teachers.
Okay.
Goes here, if anybody's curious. We have a couple different ways. Again, it's available. helped, but it's not required or even encouraged. I mean, the idea is, like, as teachers, we should not be encouraging anyone. We should come see and talk to me as a teacher. I mean, that is weird and suspicious. I got something for, you know, it's like, you can make it, so it's a balance between, like, making it clear that that's available, but not suggesting that. But we do have, when you come in for meditation on Tuesdays and Sundays, there's a little sign-up sheet, which you may or may not have noticed, right by where you pick up the chant book. And if you put your name down on that sheet, then you can come talk to whatever teacher is leading that night or day, in that back room over there where we also do introductory meditation. So on Tuesdays, that's right away because we just have one period of sitting, and on Sundays, you leave at Kinhin or you go in order through that list. And there's instructions. If you've never done it before, you can ask somebody, and you get this little card that tells you what to do as well. And that's for an opportunity, like 5, maybe 10 minutes or so. You know, you come with one issue or question, or maybe you just want to kind of check in about your practice. You just want to, you know, because you want to start forming some kind of relationship. And so sometimes you may not have a particular question, but you want to present what sometimes we say, that present the edge of your practice. What is alive? What are you working on? So you come and present that, and not because, you know, I don't know. I like to think sometimes we give good answers or ask really questions that give you a lot of insight, but that's not actually the most important part. It's the process. You have to kind of just try it and see what's useful about it. And I always found it was my very process of preparing to go show my practice to someone that was the useful part. If I'm going to go talk to somebody, I'm like, what is going on? What am I working on? How am I feeling? So there's that, which we call Sanzen. That's during Zazen. And often during session, we do that more frequently. And then we also have informal practice discussion or Dharma interview, where you can meet with one of us outside the temple for, you know, 30 minutes, maybe longer sometimes, when you have more that you want to talk about. And then over time, people who have felt that that was helpful, and there is this time and proximity when you've been around for a year and a half or 2 years or more, and you just find that this relationship is helpful, then you can ask to become a formal student, which we call a lay disciple. My husband hates that name. He thinks it's really creepy. But I tried to think of a better one, and I can't really think of a better one. So whatever, it's a formal student. And that's when, in our lineage, where then somebody gets a Rakusu and a Dharma name, a lot of times that just comes with Jukai, when you become a formal Buddhist. And what that means is, like, you know, what that formal relationship means, which hopefully maybe we'll hear from some people, differs a lot by person, by teacher and by person. So I will just kind of sorry, I didn't mean to kind of waylay the topic. I just realized there might be some people here.
What are you talking about? Yeah, the technical part of things.
So for me, when I first started sitting with Domio in a small group that we had, I just really wanted to learn more and learn more. So I started asking Domio, how do I get a teacher? I kind of hung in her throat. And then I probably asked her 3 times after we moved here.
So it unfolds over time. Yeah. You have mm-hmm. to add, it unfolds over time. And,
yeah. But I know there's something I learned the right way. That was me.
That's right. So then how does the relationship, I mean, do students meet with the teacher on a regular basis for an hour or do you meet there? You know, how does that work? What goes on?
I've been curious.
I'll let you answer that first.
It really is, it's really very individual about how, you know, sometimes you meet pretty regularly, and there's one metaphor someone uses about practice and like the temple and formal practice and even student-teacher relationship, where sometimes we're in orbit. So sometimes we're really close and we're meeting with the teacher regularly or doing some study with them, and sometimes life circumstances kind of takes you far out in that orbit and you're not as in regular contact. So it's really highly variable. Formal students, I like to check in with at least once a quarter, and as a minimum, but it can really vary.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when people are just curious, they're curious about either me as a teacher or just a teacher, and I said it's a little bit like dating versus marriage. You know, in terms of like the formality of it, it's like sometimes people think that like I'm going to take a teacher formal step is where it's at, when it's like that's just an acknowledgement of a relationship that you've started to build up. So then it's like, well, let's date for a while, you know, like come see me or whoever it is that you're yeah. thinking of developing a relationship with, and see if it's helpful. I mean,
yeah. And it's as I said at the beginning, it's not necessarily for everybody. There was a member at Durham Moraine who's been there, I think, longer than Gyokoko, so like more than 30 years. And I think he actually
kind of disappointed all of us. We're like,
He took a teacher within the last year, and it was kind of a bummer, because I always held him out as this example of serious, steadfast practice, and he didn't formalize a student-teacher relationship, and you can have, it's not like a measure of deep practice. So, but doggone it, he went and did it.
I'm a little confused, which is pretty wrong. As you all well know. So, just because I come and see you, either here or at your home, or talk to Shintai, that's not a teacher-student relationship. This is a more formal thing you're talking about.
Like, and I guess we're talking
about a contract almost. No, not officially.
But thanks for bringing that up, actually, because there can be informal meetings and informal relationships. It's when you have the Roxu that you are formalizing it and making it public. But there's informal relationships that arise all the time, and that's more of that. He just came in and saw a teacher in Sanzen.
So why wouldn't you really call you or Domino my teacher?
Well, you could if you wanted.
Okay. I see the difference, I guess.
And sometimes you start to relate to someone that way, thinking of them as your teacher, as a step towards maybe doing the public ceremony and sewing the Roxu and all of that. Yeah.
Is that just a more serious commitment on the part of the practitioner then? Is that what this is?
What I see it as is, because I think it differs by person, and maybe some of the people who have taken teachers, like Keiko, Shiketsu, Myoju, can speak to this, but I guess for me it meant, like, for me when I commit to a student, I'm saying I'm going to be there for you for the rest of my life. The student, assuming, is probably saying the same thing, but the student can end the relationship if they want. But it's like more of just like, let's be in this together. for the long haul.
You're here for all of us all the time,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really...
Oh, I'm just confused.
It really is like the question of, I mean, there's people who live together and are deeply committed to each other and are in love and never get married.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. Is it necessary? For some people, it's really important to make that formal commitment. And right. For some people, it doesn't mean anything at all.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Does that clarify, Bruce? Yeah. Sorry.
I think if you have anything to add.
Yeah,
I was going to say how it looks for me. And it seems to me that each of you is available if I have questions. And that's a kind of student-teacher relationship. But I'm not currently pursuing a question and want to go back a second and a third time to get it packaged. And that might be a little bit more formal, but it might still not be, will you be my teacher? But maybe sometime I think, oh, I need someone who will stay with me on this because it's going to take me a while to get this worked out. And so it doesn't seem to me, the one thing that is consistent is that many of the things about Zen Buddhism confuse me because they aren't prescribed. It was really delightful to be a Catholic and when you go to confession, here's the steps you do and then you say it and then you get forgiven and then you can go on. Or if you're going to, there's a formality to baptism and you've been baptized once. This relationship is available to me to help me grow spiritually, but it doesn't have all that trapping, so I can't say, maybe I would make one up for myself.
Sure.
But before I go to Shenzhen, I think I want to think about this and be prepared and have an idea of what I want to say. But there's no catechism that tells me those steps.
Right.
This is the convention of how it's done. There is a convention, but it's mysterious and it's not quite nailed there.
Well, and that's part of the reason, I'm glad you brought that forward, because part of the reason for the talk is to kind of have this conversation, that because sometimes I think you can feel like, does everybody else know what's going on? Because I don't, but I'm not going to ask, because it seems like everybody's figured it out, and I don't know what's happening here, because it is really individualized, really vague. And one of the things you're reminding me is that when you have a Wagesa, you're joining the general global Sangha of the Ten Quarters and becoming a card-carrying Buddhist. The Raksu also is a commitment to this lineage tradition and a specific teacher. So that's one of the big differences there, of formalizing that. But I like your description, like we are available. You can bring a question forward. And it is vague what's going on sometimes.
I, final thing is, sometimes I'm in complete fear of writing my name on the card. It's just like, I feel like I'm going to panic. Like that's, I'm saying that.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Like, what's that, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that's bad or good. It just is what happened. Should I write? Maybe I'll do it next week.
Or sometimes if there's another, like when I've signed up other places where there's a name there, or I feel like, oh well, there's not going to be time for me. It's not that important. And that's kind of a way of saying my practice isn't that important, right?
Yeah.
So kind of going through like, no, my practice is important.
I'm really grateful for this topic.
And just like, Sangha is so important, and sometimes Sangha is lovely and supportive, it's full of lovely people, but that's not all of Sangha. Sangha is also challenging and uncomfortable and like family after a while, and you know, so in the same way that like even that process of going to see a teacher, you know, I mean, at the nicest level, it's like you go see a supportive teacher and you share your practice and you're seen and you make a connection and it's lovely. But sometimes you go and
you leave going like, that's not what I meant to say. Like, you know what, God, you know, I would be going to Kyogen and I would leave and I'd just be like, that's, what just happened? I didn't intend for to talk about that. Or signing up with teachers even now as a teacher, what does that mean? Am I saying that I need some help? And I go to this teacher and then I'm still kind of, you know, something arises, like I want to show that I don't really need your help. I know what I need to know. You know, just watching this stuff arise, this sense of needing to prove something or get approval or...
It's kind of endless what you get out of it.
And I'm kind of that's part of it, is when we go to make ourselves vulnerable in that way, you know, and then we get to see aspects of ourselves come up that aren't necessarily so nice to face.
I'm wondering, do you and Domio have ongoing relationships with a teacher?
Yes, but not as often as it was in the early days of practice. And it's kind of a koan. And I seek out Sanzen with the bays too at times. Mm-hmm. I like sitting in both seats. I like sitting in the teacher seat and I like sitting in the student seat. I think it's healthy. So I do try to do both. It's nice to have both perspectives and be really fluid about it.
I feel like I'm just so grateful that Gyokako's still around. I mean, you know, Kyogen passed away, so quite a few of his students are without their root teacher. I think it's been ages since I kind of went to Sanzen with her. Like, I want to talk about my practice. And yet, in the back of my mind, I mean, she's there, especially if something came up around, you know, the Sangha or being a teacher or anything like that. You know, I'm like, that's where I go. But also, I think it is interesting to, I have a mentioned to some people, a bit of a, it's not formal, but a bit of an ongoing teacher-student relationship with Hogan phase. I mean, I've never even said that to him, but when I went out to a session this last time, it was led by somebody else. He wasn't really involved with the session at all. He just was there one a couple days doing work. And I was out of the work period. I got one of the residents came and said he wanted to talk to me. So I went, because I've been seeing him periodically, so that's at least like a couple times a year. And so I went to his office and I sat down there and, like, because of the 20-year history that we have and all the things that I've gone through with him, I mean, it was just like, we just immediately went there. He was just like, so how are things going? You know, and when I'm responding to him, I'm not going to be just like, well, you know, let's see, recently published a new podcast, you know. No, I mean, it's like, so when I went right there and I said, well, sometimes I feel like I know the truth and I don't always, not always able to remember it or live in accord with it. Mm-hmm. And he looked at me and said, do you know, who would you be without that thought that you know? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden my brain was like, you know, and it just opened up and you know, where it's like, I'm like, yeah, I don't know, I don't really have any questions, and all of a sudden it opens this door.
And I, so it's like going to Gyokako or going to the bays. I've been practicing like close to 40 years. It's like a really great resource. And also, like, I just went down to retreat with Sato and Mushin and Empty Field in outside of Eugene, and had Sanzen with both of them. And it's so interesting. It's just, I just think it's really good to go back and forth, like, and be challenged, right? I think it's really good.
Sanzen for me is always like stepping off a cliff. I push myself to do it. The first time was kind of terrifying because I don't know what I'm going to say. But the beauty sometimes is when it does make that turn and you're not where you thought you were going to be. you know, and it's like, it, for me, that's when it's, things start coming up, you know. When I always had this fantasy that I would go in and have nothing on my mind. We'll just see what comes out. Yeah. Never happened. I can't do that. You know, it's just like, oh.
You're not done yet, though.
But,
so.
I'm a little better at, you know, keeping the stories to a minimum, you know, we're not going there, you know. But, and different teachers, you know, it's, yeah, it's a push, but it's a good thing. Not for all the introverts.
Thanks for sharing. Thank you.
One thing that changed for me, I think, like everything that everybody said describes my teacher experience, especially what you were saying about, I think for me, marriage is a pretty good metaphor, and do you need to get married now? No, you know, of course not. I lived with my husband for 8 years before he got married, so, but one thing that changed for me when I became a formal student was that I felt like when I put on the rock suit, I felt a responsibility to represent my teacher in a good way. You know, I was less likely to use that language or act, you know, really inappropriately, just because I felt like, you know, that respect for him. So that was one aspect of it that changed things for me.
Well, that makes me think of how, you know, I've got this online sangha developing, which kind of overlaps with Bright Way, because some people participate. And I contemplate, you know, some of this online stuff, like, you know, what if somebody wants to take the precepts someday, who can't afford to come and see me, which I would encourage them to do, but maybe they can't. In our lineage, the way we treat the precepts, which is, it's a fairly open gate. You know, if you want to do that step, here you go. You can be around for a few months, as long as we know that you've really done the study and you really know what it means and you really want to do it. But lay disciple, long distance, if I've never met anybody, if I've never rubbed shoulders with them, if I've never sat at a potluck with them, if I've never watch them when Suka comes up and jumps, you know, I don't, and why? In a way, it's like, I kind of connecting to what you're saying, like, I don't want my lineage name on this person when I can't really vouch for who they are. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I would know them well enough.
Well, time for one last comment or thought. I think that's the final word. So, I'll go up and do the offering.
I desperately want to be able to shake my shoulders. Shake it up.
Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas
throughout space and time, all Arhats, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha, Prajna, Paramita.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.